Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 260, episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it's Thursday, October 27th, 2022.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, Miles?
National Civics Day. Wow, we could really do with that. National Civics Day, considering most people have no idea how anything works in our country. National Black Cat Day. Shout out to my black cat, Bergie. And also National American Beer Day. Yeah, man. Okay. People don't adopt. The thing is, people don't adopt black cats out of superstition. Right. And I think just general, like just literally anti-blackness. Like the black cat and what it evokes in whatever culture I was raised in. But yeah, the only reason I have a black cat. Oh, anyway, I have two cats because when we went to adopt a cat, they were like, this is a bonded pair. And then we were like, well, we can't split them up. So it turns out it's actually just as easy having two cats, at least in my
life. Does the black cat start feeling themselves like more and more as Halloween approaches?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when Black Panther came out, she was feeling it. I was like, you know,
yeah, it's a big time for black cats.
Yeah, I was like,
right
run
now.
This building. Don't do you. Yeah. Do you.
Well, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I hopped off the plane at LAX with a dream in my cardigan. Welcome to the land of fame excess. Whoa, am I gonna fit in? Jumped in the cab, here I am for the first time. Look to my right and I see the Hollywood sign. This is also crazy. Everybody's tearing at their insides. My thighs are literate and my hands sound like citrus. Mrs. Kinter thanks me for eating her son. Then my friend turned on the lights and put the Teletubbies on. Put the Teletubbies on. Put the Teletubbies on. So I put my hands up. They're playing my show. The butterflies fly away.
Okay.
Ha ha. Oh, yeah. Moving my hips like, yeah. I got my hands up. They're playing my show. Some woke baby saved my life today. Yeah, 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 yeah. Jack O'Brien's gonna be okay. That is courtesy of Mr. Lex Loogie, Mr. Lugubrious, in reference to my theory that Teletubbies seems so trippy because baby mind and tripping mind are same. But yeah, I appreciate I appreciate that it just opened with the straightforward lyrics of that song for a little while.
Love,
because I like to look at the look in Miles's eyes when he's like, "Is he just gonna sing the fucking party in the U.S.?"
I'm like, "He's going, he's floating, y'all, he's floating."
Anyways, I'm thrilled to be joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Mr. Miles Gray, who loves limp fries, aka I wish it was a little bit softer. I wish it was a dollar. I wish I had a fry who would limp. I would call her. I wish I had a rabbit in a vat with a Merlot and Holla. Okay, look, I mean, I don't drink a lot of Merlot, but you know, shout out Holla. You know, love the little braided bread, but I definitely like a limp fry. Shout out Lockeroni on the Discord for again. Oh, and also, who was it? Somebody on Twitter hit me up and went to, Dick's in Seattle. I was like, hey, I got the fries. And I was like, you looking good. Looking good. That was Scott. Shout out, Scott. I see you.
Nice and soft.
Is that, dude, those fries at Dick's Drive-In in Seattle? Perfect.
Mushy as hell.
They got a little bit of external crunch, but inside, soft.
Mashed
softer
potatoes.
Than Drake.
Mashy potatoes. Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a brilliant and talented podcaster who you know from 99% Invisible and her spinoff fashion podcast, Articles of Interest,
yes,
which just dropped the first episode of season two. It's Avery Truffleman!
Hi. I don't have a song. I wish these were so impressive.
I wish.
I like just really humiliating myself when we have an esteemed guest on. So this lined up perfectly with just a long song.
I just have to say, Miles, I feel like what you really like is poutine. Like what you were describing, like mushy,
too.
Mushy fry, like with the, I was like that.
Oh yeah.
That's,
oh yeah.
That cusp poutine.
Exactly. Mm. And see, but the thing is with poutine, it's the gravy that brings that it to the sogginess. Yeah. It's like, I like when they come out the fryer like that. I'm like, wow, you did that. You did that with the soft fry. But again, it's a very divisive opinion.
Oh, okay, right. That's an important dividing line, yes.
Yes, yeah, a lot of even past guests, Karama Donkwa was tweeting me. She's like, what is wrong with you?
and lost a lot
she
of
goes
people.
Hard for,
not gonna
she goes
lie,
hard
you
for
lost
the crispies.
A lot of people with that one.
Yeah, I mean, look, I saw the download numbers. Look, I saw my follower count drop. I get it. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah,
but I stand by.
Our listenership was cut in half.
Precipitous.
Dangerous to have opinions these days,
yeah.
You know?
I know. Right. I'm just talking about fried potato sticks.
Right. All right, Avery, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things that we're talking about today. We're going to talk about student performance scores are down, which is to be expected. And I think it's we all can agree, right, that the reason is teachers' unions. Thank you. So we'll talk about that.
Right,
we might check in with why police are a bad idea, maybe.
Yeah.
We are going to talk about your podcast and your menswear, your suits episode, Avery, Sprezzatura, but then how that kind of ties into sneaker culture.
Oh, yeah.
Curious to hear what your thoughts on that. And then your new season, which is all about preppy or I guess not Ivy culture.
Whoa. Yeah, it's like it's a whole discussion if preppy and Ivy are the same thing and if anyone even uses either of those words anymore. But we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just A.C. Slater and say by the bell, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And my sister used it like when she, you know, she was into like she wore cross colors and was like, taught me very early on. She was like, you look like a prep. And
yeah.
That was when I was
the
like,
the derogatory.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, well, that's, I will not allow that. I will not.
Just because I have this flannel with my fleece vest layered look. Oh.
I did have my hair like parted to this. I looked like one of the bad guys from Caddyshack.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Timely reference.
Yeah, exactly. All of that, plenty more. But first, Avery, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
So last night, I was researching the humors. You know humorism? It was like this theory of how health worked before germ theory, because a friend of mine gave blood. And then she was like, I suddenly felt so much better. I was like, whoa, that's weird. It's like bloodletting used to be the way that that doctors cured everything. And I was like, oh, what's that called again? Oh, it's called humorism. And it's like, you have these four, you have like phlegm and two kinds of bile and blood, and they all need to be in balance. And so it was like a totally like flat earther kind of thing. I was like, maybe humorism is real. Just like looking into the history of humorism and trying to remember what that was all about. But it is kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like a superstitious form of medicine that you'd think would have some crazy resurgence right now.
Yeah, it did seem like at the time they thought everything was caused by there being too much blood in your body. They were just like, you're too plump.
Too much
blood. You need to let that blood
out. But, listen, maybe there's something to it.
Yeah, but then we went all the way in the other direction and nothing, no bad things are caused by that. Maybe we need to take another look. It also strikes me as very unprofitable, like that, like
that form of medicine.
Medicine isn't going to make anyone money. So I could also.
Hey, what do I take, Doc? Oh, no, just bleed a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't buy anything.
And, yeah.
I think you buy these leeches.
Leeches, I guess, are the safe way to do it.
It's the other humors that are trickier, though, with like the phlegm and the bile. Like, what do you do with those? I don't know. I just found myself very curious about the four humors.
Yeah. This, like, when I do the Google image search of the quadrants, I'm like just looking at this and being like, that was explaining health? Okay.
It's metal as hell. It's so, you'd think it would be like, oh, hey, I'm like an INFJ and I'm phlegmatic. Like, it would be one of those, like, new agey revivals that we have now.
Exactly. It's like you have an overrepresentation of fire and earth within your system. What?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it was a time when surgeon and barber were the same job. It was just person who had sharp things at their in the room that they worked in.
And not afraid to use them.
Yeah. What is something you think is overrated?
Okay, here's my hot take. Like The Daily, the podcast. I love it as a show. It's great. But I recently went out of the country for the first time since COVID. And I was like, oh, right. I only listened to The Daily all the time. And so much of that news was like really American, not exclusively, but like very, very American. And then suddenly when I was in Europe, everyone was so aware of so much international news. I was like, man, I gotta branch out. This is like, it's a great resource, but it is not enough. Need more daily newscasts.
Wait, what? There's glaciers in Pakistan that are, about Michael Avenatti? He's going to jail. He was Stormy Daniels' lawyer.
That's what we really need to be worried about.
100%.
Yeah. I think that just goes for podcasts with the word daily in the title in general. I mean, you know?
Not all.
Yeah, I mean, we'll occasionally swing the focus to international things.
Yeah.
But it's a delicate balance of trying not to be.
We're such a big country, you know? And then you also have to be aware of like everything going on in this country. You can't be too micro-focused.
I mean, it's like, I can either talk about what's going on with Giselle and Tom Brady, or we can talk about union. I don't know. What's the balance?
I don't know how you do it. I don't know. I'm in awe. I don't know how.
When in doubt, choose Tom Brady. That's just shorthand for American culture.
Tom, terrific. Isn't he like friends with DeSantis now or something? Like their
homies?
Who wouldn't he be friends with?
Yeah, like they're buddies. They text.
Everyone's a milkshake duck. I hate it.
Yeah. What is what's something you think is underrated?
Well, then this is the part two is like the BBC. After being abroad and being like, wow, I don't know anything about what's going on in the world, I have supplemented my daily American podcast with the BBC. It's like, oh, great. This is actually a really great way, even though they just ended their Arab service, which is sad. But otherwise, it's like a relatively good way to get an idea of what's going on in the world. So I love the BBC Global News.
And kind of calming. The accents are calming.
The accent.
Wait, do they have a good podcast, the BBC?
Oh my God, the BBC Global News is actually incredible. They update it frequently, like multiple times a day from all over the world, just because they're so sprawling and massive and they have journalists everywhere and they're just filing all these reports all the time. It's great.
We update multiple times a day and we don't have journalists anywhere.
It's so impressive.
We just got bros.
Underrated. all multiple updates. Underrated.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to check it out. I haven't been listening to The Daily, but I'm going to give the BBC Global News a shot. We'll see. We'll see what this BB, whether there's anything to this BBC.
Billionaire Boys Club.
I've heard of them before.
Yeah.
Right. I discovered the British Broadcasting Service. Yes.
Goes to Europe once. Have you heard about
the
BBC?
God, I'm the worst American ever.
BCC, I think. No. That's the email thing. It's,
my God.
What is it called? What is
BBC.
It called?
BBC. That was one of Pharrell's brands.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And we're starting to get some scores in. The National Assessment of Educational Progress dropped their performance review of our educational system. And it's the first one since the pandemic. And the results are not great.
Nope.
Not great.
Nope. Pretty big drops. They said a survey of fourth and eighth graders found that math scores fell in nearly every state. No state showed significant improvements in reading, and the lowest performing students saw the largest declines in achievement. And there's a lot of takes flying out there from, it wasn't really that bad. That they these kids the scores drop to. We need the teachers unions to be absolutely obliterated because they had way too much influence in doing this and they were wrong. They're not scientists, BS. But it is clear the performance went down and many studies show this consistently. And sadly, it also shows that the lower income areas were the hardest hit. Again, which just causes more concern for increased inequality down the road because these are like vital years for someone's education, especially in like subjects like math and things like that. This is from this Atlantic article. They also cite districts with fully remote instruction saw declines in test scores up to 3 times greater than districts that had in-person instruction for the majority of the school year. And the declines, again, were particularly stark for lower achieving and minority students.
Yeah, I mean, my experience with online school, my kids are much younger than fourth to eighth grade, but it, you know, if I were working in a job where I was not able to like be there with like have one eye on what they were doing, like that, it would have been absolutely impossible. And I think doubly so when, if they were at an age where they don't believe everything I tell them, like, you know, like what, once you get to fourth to eighth grade, like they're like, yeah, okay, like they're doing what they think they need to get away with lying, or at least I'll speak for myself. From fourth to eighth grade, I'm just doing what I think I can get away with.
Oh, yeah, I was
with
Machiavelli up in that
shit. So, like, of course, this is going to be the case.
I mean, you know, I think around the world, you know, we saw a lot of countries kept their schools open and were pointing to things that, like, the studies were showing kids weren't necessarily the biggest threat vector in terms of transmission and kids weren't getting as seriously ill as adults. And, you know, many of the critics of the closures, like, point to this and, like, are like, but look, every other place saw, like, they knew that it was low and we still had to keep the schools closed. But school closures were mostly welcomed by parents. Like, it wasn't a huge, like, the, like, a lot of polling showed that this wasn't as divisive as an issue as it was, although many parents were talking about like the how difficult it would be to manage remote learning and working remotely during the pandemic. 100%. But I don't know, like, the other thing that they also point to is especially like low income and minority parents were at a much higher rate accepting of school closures and waiting for absolute safety before putting their kids in school. Because I think just in general, I think they were seeing firsthand how much more like how brutal COVID can be while trying to earn a living in a dangerous setting. So, you know, everyone's calculus is different. I think that the one thing that should be pointed out, though, is that a lot of this isn't permanent. And Mississippi students have completely recovered in their reading scores. And a study in Ohio found that the current pace of recovery in reading would pretty much eliminate the state's learning loss. Younger elementary school kids tended to have made up ground much quicker in the last year, but older students are recovering a little more slowly. And again, in, you know, race or family income are also very predictive of, you know, what that recovery is going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, so we're in the midst of like a sprint to bounce back from this, to get the students caught up, like with all this missed learning, and people's response is the teachers have it too good. Like that's how we're going to solve this, is by not giving teachers the protections they need. It doesn't quite work out in my brain. I also think we should all have to take these tests because I bet we're all
that's a good point.
Like I think my math scores have also fallen since the pandemic. I think we're all spiritually and mentally fucked up still from the pandemic. I think it was bad for all of us, and yeah, we probably need to have a little bit of, I don't know, patience with ourselves. And also, yeah, I mean, the thing that I always thought when we were talking about this over the pandemic was like, yeah, but kids are like way more resilient than the rest of us, so they'll probably be okay in the long run. But
yeah, and I do feel like the mental health thing is like the X factor. You know, my friends who are teachers were like, I'm spending so much time, you know, like fourth to eighth grade, you're like starting to have existential crises, you know, be like, who am I as like someone separate from my parents? And my teacher friends were like, I'm spending so much of my time just like talking to kids about how they're doing and like regulating that, because they also don't have each other and like their parents are busy. And so, yeah, I hope once they can like regain some sense of stability, it will allow for bounce back. But it's really sad.
I mean, I think that, you know, again, it was a very complex situation, especially in the early stages when we knew very little and the binary seemed to be stay alive or go to school. You know, and that was basically what So that was sort of what the discussion was centered around. And I mean, yeah, when you look at the data, it has to be said that school closures for those extended periods may not have been the best move, especially when you consider that, like, that it was widening the gap between rich and poor kids. But, you know, rather than just going all in and being like, and this is like, you know, in this Daily Beast thing, this person's like, look, when the Republicans take power, I was like, wait, hold on, what? And they're like, and I'm not for sham investigations, but they absolutely need to talk to, like, they need to get the heads of the teachers unions up there to explain what the heck is going on. I'm like, that is the, that direction, that energy is completely misdirected, in my opinion. But, you know, I think the biggest thing, too, is rather than just comparing yourselves, like, well, look what happened in these, like, in Western Europe or this place or this that place. The U.S. is not like other countries. You know, we're exceptional in some good ways and also in some terrifying fucking ways. And you look at how many people died and how little government seemed to care about the preciousness of, like, human life. That wouldn't inspire confidence in me as a teacher or someone having to work in the pandemic when the message being reflected back to me is you will die and that's fine. And if right. you die, who gives a shit? Like, that's totally. a fucked up environment to operate in. And again, union busting is not the answer here. But I think, like anything, right? In America, we don't have this thing where we go through something, we learn something, and then we go back and be like, this is what we learned. And this is how it will inform future decision making. Because we tend to not do that. And I think that's not a good pattern for our country, because it just undermines people's faith in certain institutions when we can't be like, guess what, we learned something from that fucking pandemic, here's what we're learning, here's what we can, how we can apply these things. But yeah, it's just hard to find the right way to navigate a fucking pandemic when half the country thinks keeping people safe is a genocide.
Right. Is it settled science that this was the wrong move to keep, like, schools closed? And
I think it's just saying when you're putting it all together, that what the transmission was like in a school and what the actual, like, potential threat to the safety to the students was, I guess, for people who want to really lean into it, feel is overblown. But again, I don't think it's necessarily something where I don't think it's incorrect to consider the safety of people and making the best decision based off of that. I think the bigger issue is we had so much noise coming from certain parts of our economy about getting back to normal that it completely muddied people's ability to actually look at the situation and then figure out what the best way to solve that is.
Right. And if, you know, teachers were at risk. So, I mean,
yeah, like, teachers were dying.
Were dying. And, like, what message, like, what kind of message does that send to young growing humans that, like, we're like, yeah, but we got to keep those test scores up so that you can compete in the global economy? Like, I don't know, like, even in retrospect, like, knowing that the spread wasn't that bad with kids, it still was bad for, like, kids could spread it to teachers. And
right. We didn't know about transmission at all.
Right.
And, like, parents. And yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's why I think, you know, again, it's just more about seeing that other countries are doing it. And I guess looking at those results, that people are immediately just like, well fuck. And the fucking scores went down. But again, I don't think a lot of the criticisms are necessarily that genuine, because, like, the underpinnings of it typically end up on some version of, like, well, teachers' unions have too much power, or, like, some other weird end goal, which isn't necessarily the health and safety of every person in the country. It's more like, look what it did to business. Look what it did to that. And then, like, it's weird. This one op-ed in the Daily Beast is truly being like, well, you know, good luck, liberals. You just gave all the people who are, like, school choice advocates all the ammo they need.
Right.
So, like, I think this study is being weaponized in some ways, and other people are just sort of objectively being like, yeah, the score is dipped. They're tending to recover. This was the fallout of it. But again, I think, more than, like, what happened here with the school closures, the biggest indictment is more about how generally as a country we fucking handled the pandemic. And
yeah,
getting focused on this, I think, give, like, sort of excuses every other failure.
And maybe you have to, like, have more protections in place when you don't have a functional healthcare system, you know? Like, maybe, like, the people who have a union looking out for them are going to be a little bit more cautious when they know that if they do get COVID and have to go to the hospital, it could bankrupt them.
Yeah.
Like that.
What about that?
Right.
Maybe this is a good argument,
for the people unions. Who are like, well, you know, adults are the ones that are going to get sick. Well, then why are the fucking bars open?
Right. Yeah, those bounce back.
If you're fucking that concerned, then be consistent with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, rather than being like, oh, it's just going to be adults. Also, why isn't Chili's open? that doesn't paint right. you as like a,
again
someone
it comes
who's really,
back to yeah
yeah
it comes back to the bias against anything that's not profitable, and schools are not profitable in the short term. Yeah.
And I think that's what's kind of wild, is just to see people's response to this shows like, as a country, like, we're completely losing our grip on being humane.
Yes.
You know, like, this woman was arrested in Arizona recently because she was feeding the needy in a park, and the laws don't allow you to serve food in a charitable nature. Like, we're criminalizing shit like that, and also having like these wild takes where they're like, the teachers unions have way too much power because teachers were dying and they were looking out for the workers involved in this union. But just using like these scores to sort of completely say that this is a failure, and if they want better wages, well, the unions really screwed them over because now they look like they don't know what they're doing.
Right. It was a difficult situation. You know, the teachers, like, we got the results we got, and it's just America's not great at dealing with difficult situations, it would seem, at this point in our evolution.
Also, any sort of like woulda, coulda, shoulda about COVID feels ridiculous, to be like, right. We shouldn't have been wiping down surfaces. That didn't do anything. It's like, well, okay.
Yeah.
We didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and all those times they were like, don't wear a mask. You know what I mean? We were throwing spaghetti at the wall. We had no idea. Like, yeah, there's a lot of things we should have done differently. I don't know.
It's funny in retrospect that I was disinfecting my Cheerios boxes when I got them home from the grocery store, but I'm also like not calling for the heads of the people who suggested that it could be spread by, you know,
right.
particles on Cheerio boxes, because we just didn't know, and everyone was freaking out, understandably.
Right.
And it did kill a million people.
Yes. Yeah.
And again, right. Try operating in good faith, like, in what's the best interest for your own health or your community's health, when you have millions of people who will just be like, why are you wearing a mask? Why are you doing this? Let me get in your shit. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think for people who want to make a really easy comparison, it's like, well, they didn't do that in like South Korea or whatever. It's like,
right.
we're not dealing with the same shit.
Right.
Also, in South Korea, the government was like bringing people food to be like, hey, we know you're locked up. Here's a fucking care package, because we know you have to eat, because we understand that as, you know, just a concept, right. rather than our version, which is like, hey, salute the people whose only financial recourse is to go buy groceries for people with more money.
Right. All right. Let's move on to maybe the police are a bad fucking idea, part two.
Wow.
A recurring segment we have. So a couple weeks back, the Edmonton police released a composite of a suspect in a 2019 sexual assault, a black male, who, judging from the image, presumably escaped on the Polar Express, because the image they released makes him look 12 years old.
No.
And uncanny, like, it's not a purse, like, it like you say, like Polar Express, you're like, are you a computer animated character?
Yeah, it's a computer animated 12 year old.
What?
Yes. And so what they did was they used DNA phenotyping, which is the process of predicting a physical appearance and ancestry from unidentified DNA evidence. This is not a set. There is not a settled science around this.
Oh my God.
The cops bought the composite from a company called Paraben Nano Labs, which sounds very official. They routinely provide this service to law enforcement, and the Edmonton police claim this tactic was taken because the public needs to get this person off the streets, even though they admitted that the composite was not 100% accurate. Turns out massive understatement. Less than a week later, the Edmonton police issued an apology over the use of DNA phenotyping, after a massive backlash for its broad characterization of just a black man, again, could be a black child, which experts expressed concern would lead to mass surveillance of any black man approximately 5'4".
Oh my God, DNA phenotyping sounds like phrenology or something. Yeah. Like arcane. That is wild.
Especially to couple that with like, and this is who did it.
Whoa.
The face is so specific, but it's like a police sketch, but it's not, it's based on kind of less than a police sketch, which
racist
police sketches
AI.
Are already, you know, very, very problematic. But one geneticist called the, quote, science of extracting facial profiles from DNA, quote, dangerous snake oil, while one taxpayer complained the government is wasting money on racist astrology for cops.
Which, oh my God. Yes, 100%.
Well,
you know, we always hear that the problem with algorithms is human bias, and this is like the visual manifestation of like
100%.
Using science to dress up human bias. That's so scary. That's to be like, "Oh, it heritage and history to manufacture it."
Also gives DNA evidence a bad name by being and from this DNA, we will conjure this image of like a composite that a computer made. But yeah, the company that provides the service, Paraben, also does DNA matching. But this specific service is called Snapshot, was first released in 2014. And a lot of people in the field of DNA research were skeptical of Snapshot and continue to be. For one thing, the company's science has yet to be published in any peer-reviewed literature. So that's one of those things that like we generally look for in our science.
It also makes me wonder how they came up with the name Snapshot. It sounds too like cute
right.
and ineffective. You know, it's like Snapchat or like a snap judge. It's like, that's not...
Right.
You weren't even trying.
Right.
Snapshot.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Hey, this will take off. Yeah.
Yeah. It does feel focus grouped.
Yes.
Like it feels
exactly.
like it came out of like Mattel, like Mattel's like focus grouping, like for coming up with the name of like a Snapshot Barbie is our new.
Or like a like, fucked up kid's toy. It's like put two drops of blood in the receptacle container, wait 15 minutes, and then it'll reveal your new image like with Snapshot.
Like, that's like the BuzzFeed personality test of the future.
Right.
Totally. In like Gattaca world, we'll just
give
be
us
dropping
your blood,
our blood
and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. See what Looney Tunes character we are by dropping our blood into a vial.
Oh my God, I could totally see it.
Don't even answer questions anymore.
a version of the future where, like, you know, the 23andMe goes down a path where you're like spit in a cup and then like they do all sorts of fun, like personality tests.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff
right.
like that.
It's like, have you tried a balayage design, like hair dye job? Like that would really look good for you. Like what? I'm
given
bald.
Your ancestry, right?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't have hair. You're looking at me. You're telling me I should get balayage. What the fuck you mean?
Right. But there's basically no way to know how they're accomplishing what they say they are. Their response to the criticism is, "We're not in the business to write papers. The results speak for themselves."
So the results are fucked up, my man.
Yeah, and they're bad. A geneticist whose work Paraben admits they partly base their technique on suspects that Paraben is just generating a bunch of generic faces and then using the DNA info to tweak these faces and fill in the blanks.
It's Theranos. Oh my God.
Yeah, it really is very similar to Theranos. Wasn't that kind of what they did with
Yeah. Wait, now it's kind of delicious.
You're saying you're doing.
I'm like ready. This is like the takedown is making itself.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So that would explain why the composite looks so broad. And just, yeah.
Or just be like, what the, like, it, land that you say that, it really does feel like a create a player function in a sports game.
It does.
When it's like, here are the 17, like, 8 faces you can then fuck, if you can fuck with from there.
Right.
Because this one, like, how, like, it's a, like, this fucking mugshot looks like a fucking 13-year-old, 12-year-old.
Well, that's, so this is what's wild, okay? So from the DNA testing that they're doing, they can't even determine a person's age using DNA.
Oh my
so
God.
They chose the age of, you know, 13, 14. And like, that's a point that we discussed recently, like with regards to the LA City Council's like racist comments. It's interesting that they chose to spread a picture of a black child when they couldn't possibly know the age. Like, the othering and targeting of Black children is, like, real, and it's a cultural sickness that I feel like comes from the dissonance that occurs in the brain of a person whose cultural conditioning tells them to be racist against Black people, but whose humanity tells them that these are fucking children, and to, like, to help smooth over that dissonance, they, like, grasp for anything they can to, like, find something that others Black children, like,
right,
the science, because, of it, right?
Yeah, like it, and yeah, I don't know, the in terms of skin color, one expert estimated the scientists would only be able to predict someone's skin color using DNA with 25% accuracy.
Wow, they went in on his complexion too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but this is in Canada, right?
Yeah, this is in Canada, but this is also so the cops in Edmonton apologized for using the tech. It doesn't mean they'll necessarily stop. And in 2020, the NYPD announced that they'd no longer use Snapshot in their investigations. But then more than a year later, it turned out that they had maintained a relationship with the company. So,
I knew, I was like, I had a sinking feeling. Like, I was like, cool, this is going to, you're going to hear.
Where's
that
the NYPD and all this?
Cool. Like some American, police unit is going to be like, all right, we got this like new technology. Seems pretty legit.
I'll play this. This was from 5 years ago. This is from a local news broadcast in Denver when they're like heralding the arrival of DNA phenotyping.
New at 10, putting a face on crime. What if you could see what a suspect looks like just from the DNA left behind?
So it sounds like sci-fi, but Aurora police are some of the first in the country to use this cutting-edge technology to try to catch the bad guys. But Denver 7's Jacqueline Allen found some question whether the science is ready.
Private companies say they can use your DNA to make predictions about what you look like, your skin color, eye color, painting a digital picture of your face. But some researchers are concerned about how accurate that is. So we tried it ourselves.
So they go on. But again, like the binary here is like new technology to catch the bad guys.
Bad guys,
but
exactly.
But then they
got to
level that off. Like, and some people who actually know what the fuck they're talking about are like, not so fucking quick.
Right. Yeah.
It just shows again, like, it's this always, there's always like the side that's like, yes, spend more money so I have to do less work to actually catch somebody. Like, hey, buddy, your face looks like this racist fucking AI algorithm face. So it was you.
Right.
Or they'll actually have to use DNA to match that. But, and then on the other side of just people trying to say, this is fucking dangerous. It's pseudoscience.
Yeah. I mean, just think about who has, like, these companies are like, when you read the history of these companies, they get like hundreds of millions of dollars of cash infusions from, you know, venture capital firms. And who, where is the money on the other side of that? You know, who's mm-hmm. balancing that out by looking out for people who are getting wrongly convicted? It's like public defenders and shit, you know, like right. people who are, you know, not making any money. And then, you know, also it would be interesting to look at the sourcing of that local news story, because they got to try it out themselves, like a fun little like party game. So they obviously did that story with the cooperation of the DNA evidence like company that they were reporting on. So
also just the political ramifications of like circulating pictures of people I was just thinking, I like met someone recently who was like, oh yeah, I really hope Donald Trump runs again. I don't really agree with him on anything but like crime. We have to close the border. You know, he's like, these illegals, they're like causing, he's like, what did he say? He was like, my wife got mugged the other day. I was like, how do you know it was an illegal immigrant? And he was like, you don't. And this guy was an immigrant, you know? He was like, right. You don't know it wasn't an illegal immigrant. You know, it just plays right. into like this larger political paranoia that we're so, it's like, for some people, it's their number one voting issue above everything else. Yeah. Is like, am I safe? Is my family safe against like these other people? So that's so to imagine just like more imagery, more faces,
right?
More images put up on TV of like, this is maybe probably a danger. People with this like,
yeah,
ethnic background, like that's terrifying.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people are definitely going through mean world syndrome of just having that just put right back in their face. And, you know, we talked about the proliferation of like Ring cameras and home surveillance and all this other stuff and like the fucking Nextdoor app and shit like that just feeds and feeds and feeds your, like, if you have, if your cognitive bias is aimed towards, what the fuck's going on out there? Everything's so fucking unsafe. There's no shortage of ways to fucking freak yourself out. There's no fucking, like, you could turn on any fucking channel, look at any app, whatever. There's something to reinforce that. And yeah, it's becoming a really effective tool. And it's the entire, it's one of the biggest things Republicans are running on now, which is like, crime wave, that's not there.
Right. Yeah, there's money in the fear. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about menswear.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And yeah, I just checked out your podcast, Articles of Interest, Avery, and
thanks.
The menswear, the suits episode, which kind of dove into menswear, was super fascinating. It got at this idea that I've always been aware of, but I hadn't really like heard people kind of put words to it. But this idea that I guess it's called sprezzatura.
Sprezzatura.
Sprezzatura. See, I'm a man, so I have to like say it like I don't even give a shit about it.
Oh, but you love yelling things in other languages.
That's true. That's, your... That's true. That's kind of my thing. But so you actually get at this while talking to this, like, I guess, self-described menswear, like, nerd in this store that is, like, menswear, like, the highest level of menswear, dandiest menswear store in modern America, and it calls itself the Armory, which I thought was, it still has to like slather itself in like violence and like traditional masculinity, but like this is where you get your weapons, and by that we mean kerchiefs and
yeah, exactly, arm laser. Up, boys. Yeah, yes.
It's a pocket square, not a kerchief.
But hearing you talk about it made me realize that like since I guess it's since, as you outlined, like since the like courts where royals and like high society women and men were all dressed in like jewels and lace and like wigs, like since that time, and you talk about the one person who kind of created this advent, but the one central thing in men's fashion is that men need to look great while appearing not to care.
Yes.
Like appearing not to try, which I thought was such an interesting insight.
Men have to appear like they don't care about fashion and like they are up to way more important things.
Right.
And this is so true. You know, it's interesting. Like, this was also especially true. This wasn't in the episode, but it's actually in this season of Articles of Interest, which is all about preppy clothes.
Right.
And that starts with the history of Brooks Brothers, which was one of the earliest ready-to-wear manufacturers. It was one of the first places you could go and not have to get fitted for a tailor to make you a custom suit. You could go and just buy something off the rack. Like, Brooks Brothers is one of the first places to do that. And that was huge in America in, like, the early days of the American democratic experiment, because it was this, like, democratic way of dressing. Like, poorer people who thought they'd never own a suit or who only wore secondhand things could now, like, buy a ready-to-wear suit at a much lower price point. And something that was so interesting about that is like it created this idea that because you could just buy clothes off the rack, men, there were no ready-made clothes for women. There were like only ready-made clothes for men. You don't get ready-made clothes for women until like the 19th century. And so it created, or until the, yeah, late 19th century. And so it created this idea that like, oh, men don't have to care because there are these companies that will care for them. Meanwhile, women had to like keep up and you sew their own clothes and keep up with fashion journals themselves. And it was this whole thing. It was like, well, men have to care about politics and economics, and women largely weren't allowed to. And so, you know, it created this idea that it's like foolish or silly to care about what you wear when it's something that we obviously all have to do. So there's this culture in menswear where even if you do buy a really expensive, whatever, sport coat, whatever dandy thing you like, you're supposed to leave it like unbuttoned or like a little ruffled, right, or like the collar a little bedraggled. You don't want to look too buttoned up or like you care too much.
Yeah. This reminded me of the Harry Styles conversation, because that like that seems to be the person who is the most, you know, fashion forward,
yeah,
you know, icon in the modern world. And for a long time, he stuck to this. Like, he would wear these very, like, attention-grabbing, like, just openly beautiful articles of clothing. But it, like, he wore it in a way that it seemed like they were just, like, thrown at him. And whatever happened to stick was, like, part of the outfit. It was just,
that's
like,
so
they're,
well,
like, kind of draped. And that still, like, tends to be the case with Timothy Chalamet. We'll go, like, his thing will be like shirtless under a beautiful suit jacket, or, you know, but then I think, you know, when Styles wore that like silk shirt and jewelry to the Met Gala, and he actually looked like he had bathed that day.
Yeah, right.
Like, his hair was combed, his style, jewelry, right, was in place. He looked like he had, yeah, taken a shower, like he had done his nails. And like that really, because I had not I'd been like, well, he's worn stuff like that before, right? But it was that he wasn't putting the sprezzatura into it. It was like kind of openly, you know, a presentation of like beauty out and out that
totally
seemed like it, you know, it really made an impact. Everybody like kind of lost their mind over it, even though it was,
you know, not that different from some of the stuff he's worn before.
And I mean, there's a really interesting conversation to be had there also about like whiteness and who gets to look like disheveled and like they don't care. And it's really interesting. Like I really realized this in this season about preppy clothes, where, you know, in the early days of preppy in like the 1920s, 1930s on the campus of Princeton, these guys have like extreme sprezzatura. You know, they have holes, and that's why they have like the patches on their elbows, because they're like, their sweaters are pilling, their khakis have rough edges. You know, they look like kind of gross in some ways, like a la early Chalamet. But then when you get to sort of the evolution of like, you know, by the 90s, when you have the low heads and the origins of street style and like hip hop infused Tommy Hilfiger, that's all about looking like fresh and looking clean. But it's arguably a lot of the same clothes, just worn in like really different styles. And a lot of it has to do with like the culture around who is wearing it. If there is a culture where like sprezzatura is considered, you know, cool or not.
Right. Yeah. And I think this also ties into sneaker culture.
Yes.
Like that's the one place where men are allowed to like focus their inner aesthete. Like,
yes.
I think in, at least in some culture, I was actually at a child's birthday party. Yeah, I was invited. I didn't just like show up.
Walking my
just
dog.
Just judging all the fashion babies. Just judging everyone, all the children's but outfits. Yes.
It was on the west side of Los Angeles, which is a totally different world than kind of further east. And like I had Jordans on and every other dad had like the same, they all looked very preppy. It was like, and I couldn't tell if it was like this style of clothing had really like come back in a strong way just on the west side of LA, or if I
That's
was just, but yeah, it, they all had like kind of loafers or, you know, canvas, like boat
East
shoes
Coast,
on.
Bringing that East Coast shit.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was just in D.C. and I was in Georgetown and I was like, I was looking at that prep style dead in its fucking eye. And I was like, every dude is wearing a fucking patterned shirt with a fleece vest over it. Like, I'm not lying. Like, there's like a crew of five dudes. Everybody had flannel shirt, fleece vest, khakis, some kind of like boat adjacent shoe. And I was like, it was like freaking me out. I was like, is this a bit? But it just felt like uniform.
Right? I mean, the question is, Miles, do you think that's like a resurgence? Do you think that's like a new thing? Or do you think it's something that's never gone away?
I think it's like, because to me, it looks like how my like parents would dress kids in like the late 80s. You know, they're like, right. You should look like a little yuppie. You know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's swag. And then I think then like in the 90s, we all got grungy and shit and had our like, you know, punk or emo or hip hop phase or whatever. And then I think, I don't know, if for whatever reason, I think now it's like, I think just people are really back to being able to signal their wealth or socioeconomic status through what they wear, even if it's not really like their style. It's like, well, when I wear this, people know I'm probably an Ivy type dude, or, you know, like I have a good job. Because I'm wearing the uniform of a person that does that.
Totally.
Yeah, you get to talk to like, there. I forget the name of the company, but there's like a company that all of the fashion houses and all of the like clothing manufacturers consult to be like, okay, here's what we're doing 2 years from now. And it raises like a really interesting chicken and the egg thing. But
yeah, there are these like trend forecasting companies. I feel like after the pandemic, there's been so much conversation around like, what's in trend right now, you guys? It's like Barbie core, it's clown core, it's norm core, like all these cores, you know, there are all these trends right now. And I feel like it's just because we're sort of reacclimating and trying to like understand each other again.
Right.
And yeah, so it got me thinking about this company called WGSN that most major fashion houses consult to be like, what is going to be in? And so I talked to them about trends and how there are so many trends now. And my personal theory for why preppy, and no one uses that word. Even when I talked to the CEO of Brooks Brothers, he was like, we don't use that word. And then you look at their website and it's like tennis sweaters worn over, you know, it's like the same clothes. But now we call them classics, or we call them basic, or, you know, you go to Uniqlo and it's like preppy clothes. Those are just classics. And I think why they're having a moment now you know, it's arguable whether they're like having a moment or they never went away, but it's because they're like a way out from trends. People who are like, you know what? I can't keep up with all these trends. I'm just going to dress like in a classic way that I don't have to think about. That's like,
right. Like, oh, so we're back to being like, I don't have the band.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a new version of that.
Right.
Totally.
Now, fuck it. I will wear my fucking pattern flannel with my fleece vest. And look, no shade if you dress like that. I don't give a shit.
Everybody, I think there's a way to do it well. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think when I look at it too, I don't get as overwhelmed. Like, because I used to be super up on streetwear from college on. And then, like, I started, like, having to be in the real world. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. Okay. I don't have the money to wear this shit all the time. But I think it just more forced me into a place of, like, well, what is my own style? And I'm just being like, I'm still 15 years old in the San Fernando Valley. So I will wear basketball shorts, sweatpants, t-shirts, hoodies. And just that's kind of my zone. You know what I mean? Like, I'm necessarily saying like, I don't have the time to fucking figure that shit out. I'm like, that's just kind of where I landed in terms of what my personal style is.
No, it means you thought it. That's like a incredible thing. It just means you know who you are and you know what you like. And I think a lot of people haven't done that work, you know?
Right.
If you just want to like dress in a generally manageable, acceptable, culturally acceptable way that literally opens doors for you, preppy clothes are like a tool, you know? You're like, okay.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's like code switching of clothing.
Yeah.
I'm wearing the uniform.
And like, it's open to anyone. It's like the keys to the kingdom. And like, you can just have them. It's kind of amazing.
Right. It is kind of like, yeah, because it's sort of like what a MAGA hat does. Like, if you're at a rally, like, you're like, guess what? Just because I wore this hat and they had no idea.
It doesn't mean anything.
Because I had the fucking hat on. They did not really analyze more than like, got the hat. All right. Good with me. You know,
exactly.
Like, I remember once I did coverage at a Trump rally and I was like, fuck it, bro. I'm going to wear a red hat. And everybody was like, hey, what's up, fella? Like, coming up.
Wait, it didn't even say anything on it?
It was just a red hat. Because that was just my thing of being like,
so smart.
This is, I think, just the way I'd be able to navigate these people.
Yeah.
As somebody who's navigated white culture pretty frequently, I'm like, yeah, this might work. And it did. And I think, like you're saying, especially for people who are in situations where you're going to be just a snap judgment is going to be made on your appearance, you show up in the clothing of whatever their world is. And without thinking, they're like, well, all the markers are there of person who is of the same socioeconomic bracket or culture.
100%. And I have to say, like, when I did this research, I've been working on this for months now. I really thought I would be going to Kennebunkport to, like, interview people named Muffy periodically. Right. But
I was about to use that word.
Muffy.
Yeah.
Muffy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Muffy.
But, like, yes. I actually interviewed someone who was like, yeah, I dated a girl named Pussy. Like, preppy names are the best.
Wow.
But really, I ended up interviewing almost like mostly New Yorkers, mostly Black and Jewish New Yorkers. And the story is like Black and Jewish and very Japanese. It is only a small percentage of it that is actually like WASPy. It is a really fascinating story of how like so many different groups have taken on different versions of this look and actually made it their own. And now I love it. Like, knowing the whole history, I'm like, this is the coolest American story.
There, in the first episode of the new season, you talk about this book that was sort of a like sociological study of Ivy League culture in the mid-century that was done, wasn't it like a Japanese author had like come through to like take photographs? And because it was just, it's not the sort of thing that you would do if you were living in the moment, but because it was this like sociological thing, it like really captured all the weird little sort of shrugged off gestures and styles and kind of made it very influential, right?
Yeah. It was like, no one would think at the time that the book was written to be like, isn't it so amazing they're wearing loafers without socks? But, this Japanese author was like, this is so interesting. Like, look at what's going on here.
Right.
And so this book called Take Ivy, which in later episodes will be revealed, is like a pun. It's a word play on the Dave Brubeck song Take Five, became like the Bible for this look.
Wow.
That then had a huge moment in the early aughts in like J. Crew, Jenna Lyons era. Like, I saw Take Ivy for sale at a J. Crew around that time. There was like this huge preppy revival, you know, and like
Right.
Andre 3000, you know, backpack rap vampire weekend Gossip Girl. There was this like preppy moment I think our time now is referencing, because like recent nostalgia is also in. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's time.
It's a 20-year cycle.
But Cake Ivy was a huge part of it. This like relic from 1965 still.
Yeah, and
is,
you
like,
look at it,
today.
I'm like, when I look at the images, I'm like, is this a J. Crew or like early Abercrombie lookbook?
Right, exactly. Or Amelie Andor. Like, it looks so, right. I mean, one must admit, it looks good. Like, they look good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, like, it's a vibe.
It's a vibe. It's a particular look.
Yeah.
Right. But pay attention to your sneakers, people. Like, you can still dress preppy and not wear the
yes!
kill shot. Like, J. Crew sells like two types of sneakers.
Yeah.
The Nike kill shot and the Stan Smiths. And like,
Adidas,
those were the
yeah.
only sneakers that I saw at that birthday party. That's
well, now
it.
People,
oh,
now, now people rock the Alexander McQueen version
yeah.
of the Stan
yeah,
Smiths
yeah, yeah.
that had like the thicker one. They're like, these are actually $600 versions
right,
of a very simple
exactly.
shoe. I'm like, they still look the
they
same,
look
bro.
Identical.
The sole is just thicker. Fine. Good for you. You have spent more money, but that is not style. And that's another interesting part too about fashion, is so many people now just equate the fucking price with some level of like aesthetic viability or uniqueness, when it's like, this shit is so, it's a fucking illusion. And you just have chunky looking Stan Smiths on.
Have you covered rep culture at all? Like, people who are doing like replicas of like expensive sneakers, like getting them from the factories, like people working at the factories?
Well, I haven't done it with sneakers, but I did do a whole episode where I interviewed the icon himself, Dapper Dan. And Dapper Dan most famously like stole the like Gucci logo and the Louis Vuitton logo in like the 80s and 90s and would just print really high quality, like amazing leather outfit. Like, he was the first one to make jumpsuits, like leather Gucci printed jumpsuits. Like, they weren't doing that.
Right.
Like, the whole reason you see people wearing like designer jumpsuits is because they were incredible high quality knockoffs. And then the whole saga is like, Gucci started copying Dapper Dan. So it's like, who's ripping off who? Which is, and now it's kind of a happy story because now Gucci like kind of bought Dapper Dan and he works within them. So it's sort of a happy ending. But Dapper Dan said this beautiful thing to me that I think about all the time. He said, these symbols don't just represent brands. Like, the interlocking G's represent like prosperity and wellness and like health in a weird way. To like have these symbols, they're almost like the ancient scarab or the ankh, you know, they're like powerful symbols that everyone should have access to. And honestly, like, I have a pen pal who's incarcerated, and the very first letter he sent me has like Gucci logos all around the letter, and it's like, that's the power of this stuff. It's not it's like not even about the brand anymore, it's just like a symbol that means so much more. And it has nothing to do with like the quality of the leather or anything. So I'm like, ever since that, I'm like all about knockoffs. I think they're fantastic. Albeit like tricky terrain for designers to navigate, but so much innovation comes from it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And it just also, I think it forces a conversation about like what's the important part? Is it the visual aesthetic? Is it the design of something? Or is it, if I put it under a fucking like microscope, is the stitching right? Because how a real thing is made. And it's like, well, am I doing it? Are you dressing because you like the way it looks, or you dress because it's purely like a symbol of your wealth or a signal of that? And it's always funny, especially in sneaker culture, you hear people like, I would never wear fucking fake Jordans or whatever. And again, it shows how some people have just ascribed like, well, that the real thing has value, and that's the thing I'm going for. And if I don't want the cheap thing, because that means you don't have what it takes to earn like the real thing. But the pursuit of that is fucking dumb too. Like, who gives a shit if you can afford the real thing? Like, that's dumb as fuck. There's nothing objectively cool about that. It's just a way to differentiate. And I think it kind of blows up the pursuit of like these high-end items and what they actually really mean. And I love how frustrated people get, especially when like celebrities like Chad Johnson, he's like, I don't buy real shit at all ever. He's like, why would I waste my money?
The rep sneakers subreddit is like one large exploration of like you know, materialism in the philosophical sense, and like the ship of Theseus thought experiment.
Totally.
It's so interesting. All right, Avery, we could talk to you for hours about this stuff. We'll have to have you back
on. This
is
so interesting.
Yeah, come back.
But where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
Well, check out Articles of Interest wherever you get your podcasts. It's called Articles of Interest. And I'm on Twitter. My last name is Truffleman, and that's my handle, Truffleman. Those are the places I live. But thank you so much. This was so fascinating. I'm like, I have so many more thoughts on sneaker culture.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you.
And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
I've been really enjoying the meme about like the spirit Halloween costumes that everyone is sharing of just like, what is it? What is the meme? Like the only costume.
Right.
And there was one recently with like, I don't know, this episode of SpongeBob SquarePants where he makes Doodlebob. Who do you know this episode? Yeah. That's my favorite, where it's like an image of Doodlebob and it's like the only Halloween costume. I love that meme.
That's amazing. Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. Check Jack and I out on our basketball podcast, official NBA basketball podcast. Mm-hmm. Somehow they let us keep saying our dumb ideas out loud, and it's an NBA product. It's called Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. It's a fantastic show. Check in this week. Just always fantastic guests. New episode just dropped today. And also, I'm always with Sophia Alexandra talking 90 Day Fiancé over at 420 Day Fiancé. Now, let's see some tweets that I like. First one, past guest, Paula Vegan Allen at Paula Vegan Allen tweeted, "Dear Kanye, if I was your mother," and an ellipsis. fucking shit got me. And then another one from at Soma Kazima tweeted, "Nah, they clapping back now," and posted a video of these girls on TikTok doing like POV influencers trying Indian food for the first time. And it's just so good, because everyone's like,
oh my god, oh my god.
The tweet said, "Nah, they clapping back now," and this is so good, because if you've ever seen these videos of like white people trying Indian food for the first time, it has the exact same vibe of it being so exoticized and like, ooh, what's this? And I'm just gonna play the first couple seconds because it's genius.
Hi guys,
they're big ass nails.
We just came back from the shops and we got Indian food. Actually, this is Pakistani food, but I heard they were similar.
Yeah.
Pakistan's?
Yeah.
Pakistan? Yeah. We didn't know what to get, but we got chicken tikka masala because the manager said it was good. We also, he said a tip is to eat it with yogurt. And then we have some garlic naan. It's a bit dry.
I just love their fucking paper, like the big ass manicured fingernails.
Incredible.
Yeah. Oh, these girls are killing it. So, shout out to that TikTok account.
Amazing.
That's great. Some tweets I've been enjoying. Logan Dean, Ghost Boy Detective, tweeted, "Big Pharma should periodically release Quaaludes for a limited time, like narcotics McRibs."
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Somebody tweeted, Cool Boobs tweeted, M at Cool Boobs tweeted, "Was just reminded of the Staples logo reveal." And I guess this is a historical document, but it's like, you just kind of have to watch it, but they take the L that has like the little bent down staple, and then it like slowly, like everything else disappears. They zoom in on that L, and then the L slowly like gets an erection so that it looks like a unfolded staple.
I remember this.
And then there's like a giant explosion. It's very strange. I highly recommend you go check it out.
Also, the Staples logo was cool. I don't know why they messed with it. It was good. It was obviously a staple. It was cute. Yeah.
And then somebody tweeted a picture, I think a Photoshop, it's spirit Halloween costume, "Conservative guy scared of cities," and it's just a conservative looking dude with like a helicopter on his t-shirt that says like "Hold the Line" and a flag on his shirt, and it says, "Saw that thing on the news, too many of those people there, can't park Ford Super Duty, not scared bro." This is just a good well done Ford Photoshop. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy, Miles. What song do we think people might enjoy?
Man, time for some experimental hip hop from England. This is just a group. I don't know. They're called Baby Father. But if you know Dean Blunt, this is a project Dean Blunt is working on. And this track is called Penelope Freestyle. The beat is just like, the second I started playing it, I was like, oh, this instrumental is interesting. And I always like any experimental hip hop. So check this one out. Fantastic track. Penelope Freestyle by Baby Father.
All right. We will link off to that in the footnotes. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.